Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta and analysis of the properties. I have heard that on one occasion, as the Blessed One was wandering among the Magadhans, he enters Rajaga, went to the porter Bhagava, and on arrival said to him, If it is no inconvenience for you, Bhagava, I will stay for one night in your shed. It is no inconvenience for me, reverend sir, but there is a wanderer who has already taken up residence there. If he gives his permission, you may stay there as you like. Now, at that time, a clansman named Tukkusati had left home and gone forth into homeless through faith out of dedication to the Blessed One. He was the one who had already taken up residence in Potter's shed. So the Blessed One approached Venerable Tukkusati and said to him, "If it is no inconvenience for you, monk, I will stay one night in the shed. The shed is roomy, my friend. Stay as you like." So the Blessed One entering the Potter's shed and setting out a spread of grass to one side, sat down, folding his legs crosswise, holding his body erect, and setting mindfulness to the whole. For he spent most of the night sitting in meditation. Venerable Tukkusati also spent most of the night sitting in meditation. The thought occurred to the Blessed One, how inspiring is the way this clansman behaves. What if I were to question him? So he asked Venerable Tukkusati, out of dedication to whom, monk, have you gone forth? Who is your teacher? Of whose Dhamma do you approve? There is, my friend, the contemplative Gotama, a son of the Sakyans, gone forth from Sakyan clan. Now this excellent report about the Venerable Gotama has been spread about. Indeed, the Blessed One is worthy and rightly self-awakened, consummating knowledge and conduct, well gone and expert with regard to the worlds, unexcelled as a trainer for those people fit to be tamed, the teacher of divine and human beings, awakened, blessed. I have gone forth out of dedication to the Blessed One. That Blessed One is my teacher. It is of that Blessed One, Dhamma, that I approve. So he's talking about the Isivito Bhagava, that Gatha, that meaning. And that's how they describe Buddha. But where, monk, is that Blessed One, worthy and rightly self-awakened, staying now? There is, my friend, a city in the northern land named Savatthi. That is where the Blessed One, worthy and rightly self-awakened, is staying now. Have you ever seen that Blessed One before? On seeing him, would you recognize him? No, my friend, I have never seen the Blessed One before. No, on seeing him, would I recognize him? Then the thought occurred to the Blessed One, it is out of dedication to me that this clansman has gone forth. What if I were to teach him the Dhamma? So he said to the Venerable Tukkusati, I will teach you the Dhamma, monk. Listen and pay close attention. I will speak. As you say, friend, replied Venerable Tukkusati. The Blessed One said, a person has 6 elements, 6 fields of impingement, 18 considerations, 4 determinations. Where there is stability, conceit and boasting do not continue in existence. When they do not continue in existence, the saga is set to at peace. One should not be negligent in wisdom, should guard the truth, be devoted to relinquishment, and train only for calm. This is the summary of the analysis of his 6 elements. So, a person has 6 elements. Thus it was said in reference to what was it said. These are the 6 elements: the element of extension, the element of cohesion, the element of heat, the element of motion, the element of space, the element of consciousness. So, a person has 6 elements. Thus it was said in reference to this was it said. So, those are the 6. So, it might have been translated a little bit differently in your one, that the element of the earth element, sort of like that. So, element of extension is just now this particular object cannot extend from here to there without the property called element of extension. Now, that one is actually extending. It is actually hardness is due to this property called element of extension. Without this, a thing cannot take up space. Hardness, softness, both due to the element of extension. And then there is this element of cohesion, that watery nature, the liquid nature, and in physics is called intermolecular attraction force. So there are 2 things attract together with that one. And there is this element of motion, moving. And then element of heat, you know, whatever thing in our body, that heat, warmth, and outside, all those, the heat. And then there is the space inside our mouth, and then there's the space outside, you know, inside and outside, there's a space element. And then the element of consciousness. Those are the six elements. Mm-hmm.
I can remember you mentioned four of those when we...
In the meditation. Yeah.
What's the...
So there are another two.
Okay, so at that point of time, we only discussed only four.
Yeah.
There are another two.
Yeah, because that is, at that time, we are only contemplating about the body.
Uh-huh.
For the body, those four.
Uh-huh.
Okay, space and the consciousness, that the mindfulness meditation, that the mindfulness regard mind meditation is covering that the consciousness part.
Uh-huh.
So that element is covered.
So and actually there are six elements.
Six elements, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And a person has six field of impingement. Thus it was said in reference to what was it said. These are the six fields of impingement. The eye as a field of sensory contact. The ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, the intellect or the mind as a field of sensory contact. A person has six fields of sensory contact. So we have this eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. A person has 18 considerations. Some people translate this one as 18 mental ramblings. That's a proper word actually. A person has 18 considerations. Thus it was said in reference to what was it said. These are the 18 considerations. On seeing a form with the eye, one consider a form that gives rise to a joy, form that gives rise to a sadness, or form that gives rise to an equanimity. So we put eye and the form, and depending on the two, we get the eye consciousness. So so then that one lead to the either sadness or happiness or the equanimity. So the somanasa, domanasa, upekka is the Pali word. So
that's another word, is whether you like it, not like.
Yeah.
And you don't
bother. Yeah. So those three are coming, and one would actually think about this one. You know, although it is so, and then mental rambling is there about that particular one. Pavichara, so manasa pavichara, so one would actually, examine it from the mind, you know, whatever thing one has seen, one has heard. And so accordingly, you know, karma will follow through, you know, that I like it and I actually create this, craving for that one. And then what I can expect is that the viparinama dukkata, that is that one lead to the alteration of the form at the end, was that lead to the birth. Birth means aging and death. So that sort of things are happening with that thought. So Buddha is actually stopping at that particular point. Then one would actually have this mental rambling about these things.
Does it? Because it's only if you like it or not like it, so you do the mental things. But with the upekkha thing,
you do. Without, because not knowing the impermanent nature of that one, the whole dependent origination is actually arising. Avidya, paccaya, sankara, that nature. Whether you know it or not knowing,
it does happen.
It happens, yeah. Doesn't stop from that one. And so, on seeing that from the eye, and then on hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling an aroma with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on seeing tactile sensation with the body, on cognizing an idea with the intellect, one considers an idea that gives rise to joy, an idea that gives rise to sadness, an idea that gives rise to equanimity. Thus, there are these six considerations or mental ramblings conducive to joy, six conducive to sadness, six conducive to equanimity. So the person has 18 considerations. Thus it was said, and in reference to this was it said. The person has four determinations. Thus it was said in reference to what was it said. There are four determinations. Determinations for discernment. Discernment is wisdom over here. So sometimes translated as resolve. Resolve for wisdom. Determination for truth, or resolve for truth. Determination for relinquishment. Determination for calm. A person has four determinations. Thus it was said in reference to this was it said. So these four determinations are really big things. At the end you can see what it is. But I will say something about it from Petapopadesa. You see, when you know about the first noble truth, and then this determination for truth arises, because you actually see it is as suffering. Well, everything is suffering, you know, impermanent suffering and all sort of thing. And then you think about something that is not suffering. You know, you want to get out of suffering. And then you actually see Nibbana. So that is the Satchadittana, or the truth. So determination of truth for truth comes from the first noble truth. And when you know that it is suffering, and there is this Nibbana that one can attain, and then because of that one, then the concentration due to desire comes. Chanda Samadhi arises out of that. So it is that big. And then because of the Samadhi, you go into Vimukti level, and it's a little bit detailed. And if you know the origin of suffering, the second noble truth, and then determination for relinquishment, for giving up things, will come, because that you know that the origin of suffering is that because of the craving that I have this suffering. So what's the most logical thing is to give up, relinquishment, giving up the craving. But the Chagadhisthana, Chaga, Tagi. And then because of that one is concentration due to mind, Chitta Samadhi, Iddhipada, arises out of that one.
It's only not only that Chaga thing, isn't it? Because this is also something that I said some time ago about killing animals and all these things. It is about Jivita, so it's also...
It's also killing up, yes.
At the end, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah, everything coming under that one. Mm-hmm. And then if you have the cessation, knowing about the cessation of suffering, that is the third noble truth, and then the wisdom arises because of that one. And you see that there's all those things that are actually the cessation of craving is the cessation of suffering. So when you understand that one, and this discourse is very heavily based on that idea, that giving up, you know, that these things are not mine and all those things we are going to learn next, is coming based on that idea. So the wisdom arises. And when you put wisdom, then effort arises. The effort is that the concentration due to effort. Why? Because that craving is the problem. So you understand the cessation of craving is the cessation of suffering. So the cessation, so then you have the wisdom about that one. So whatever thing I have to give up, you know, craving I have to give up to attain this particular one. And I put effort to give up those things. So more logical and natural the flow.
When you say put effort to give up these things, is it... last time you said it's when you talk about giving up, it's not giving up just all the material things, it's like giving up the
raga dosa moha,
all I making mind making all those things,
all those things, yes, yeah, yeah, everything included,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. So and if you have the know about the eightfold path, the fourth noble truth, then it leads to the determination for calm. Upasamadhi, and because you see the right concentration, right thought, right speech is going through, and the right concentration, and then the calm. And because of that one, then the investigation, the concentration due to investigation, vimansa, samadhi, or vimansa, iddhipada is coming up out of that one. So these are not big, the small things, that those four words are the biggest in this case. Really great dhamma over here. So Buddha said that one should not be negligent of wisdom or discernment, should guard the truth, be devoted to relinquishment, train only for calm. We should train only for calm. Thus it was said in reference to what was it said. And how is one not negligent of discernment? So these are the six elements. The element of extension, element of cohesion, element of heat, the element of motion, the element of space, the element of consciousness. So the Pali word over here is the panya na pamajjati. Panyava pamanovijayati. Panya na pamajjati. And so now Buddha explained, you know, apramada bhava. In the other words, apramada bhava. If you have heard apramada, you know, it is this.
This but people don't understand really about that. Because they think they can slowly do that and when they want to do that.
Yeah.
It's not like when they want to, but if you don't put effort, as you said, so it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Because you may die in a week, so who knows?
Yeah, it is. That is because of the ignorant nature. It is that not understanding the Dhamma, not thinking about the Dhamma. So, and what is the element of extension? The element of extension can be either internal or external. What is the internal element of extension? Anything internal within oneself that is hard, solid, sustained. Head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, tendons, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, membranes, spleen, lungs, large intestines, small intestines, content of the stomach, feces, or anything else internal within oneself that is hard, solid and sustained. This is called the internal element of extension. Now both the internal element of extension and the element of extension, external element of extension, are simply the element of extension. By means of perfect intuitive wisdom, this should be seen as it really is. This is not mine, this is not me, this is not myself. Having seen thus, as it really is, by means of perfect intuitive wisdom, he regards the element of extension, he cleanses his mind of the element of extension. So we have this patavidhatu, or the element of extension, whatever that is hard. So I see whatever thing over here, hard nature, is due to the element of extension. So the element of extension is together with the other elements. But when whatever thing hard, we can see the element of extension is more prominent than the other ones. So internally you can see we have this, the excrements and the hair, all those things are here. And outside also you see the excrement, for example. And having seen that excrement outside, you wouldn't regard that one as mine. No one is claiming that one to be mine, right? Similarly, whatever thing inside is not mine either. So it's very easy to see this one when you take things like excrement. You know, because you don't want it, you don't like it, you are not happy. So similarly, it is the same. It is the element of extension. So the same principle applying to anything else in the body, whatever in heart, hair, you know, the teeth and everything, whatever someone values so much about, think about, hold about. So that perception, whatever the perception you have about the excrement, should have the other one. Whatever the perception you have about your hair or whatever thing you like and happy, you should have the same perception for the excrement as well. So they should be equal in terms of element of extension. And then when you take the outside ones, you can see this one clearly. I'm not regarding his body as mine. I'm not regarding his anything as mine. So, but what's the difference between that one and this one?
At the end, if you see somebody passed away, so you burn that body, and at the end what comes is the ash.
Yeah.
If you burn something else, like a wood, piece of wood or same something thing. Else, it's the same thing at the end.
Yeah. So it's the same thing. So one more and more think about it, then one would wonder, what is this? You know, this thing. So then he actually see from his intuitive wisdom that this is not mine. The other one is not mine, same way. There's no difference over here. This is not mine either. So one, it is hard to say this one at once. One would actually think, well, I used to call this, I am, mine, and all those things. Now you are training your mind something differently. If the external one is not mine, then this is not mine. If the excrement is not mine, then this is not mine. So you alter your thinking, the way of thinking. And having done that one, then he cleanses his mind. With the perfect intuitive wisdom, actually this one, you are not only spreading in for that particular moment, you are actually making it vast as well. You know, now if I apply this one to my body and the Padmasiri's body or somebody else's body, it is not enough. Then I need to apply across the horizon, everyone, including this galaxy and other galaxies or whatever the galaxies there is, whatever thing I can think of. And nowhere I find is something belong to me.
I think it's easy to understand. If you think about your nails, when you have your nails on your fingers, you look at them and like you claim in dimensions.
Yeah.
And if you cut once it. You cut them,
yeah.
And when they are on the ground,
yeah.
You don't want to touch it.
No. The feeling.
Yes.
You know? It's the same thing for the hair.
Yes,
you know, the hair thing. We actually sort of value. And then you see that same hair on the plate. You throw it out, you know, feel like that's done. So if this is good and you are holding to it, then that means that feeling is not correct then when it is seen on the plate.
Yeah.
If the one on the plate is correct, then the feeling that I have over here is not correct. So that you can see that our perceptions are really crappy in that sense.
Yeah.
So we got to have the same perception for these things. It's actually a foul nature in this body, nothing else. So, so he cleanses his mind. And what is the element of cohesion? The element of cohesion may be either internal or external. What is the internal element of cohesion? Anything internal belonging to oneself that is liquid, watery and sustained, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, oil, saliva, mucus, oil of the joints, urine or anything else internal within oneself that is liquid, watery and sustained. This is called the internal liquid property. One, now both the internal element of cohesion and external element of cohesion are simply element of cohesion. By means of perfect intuitive wisdom, this should be seen as it really is. This is not mine, this is not me, this is not myself. Having seen thus, as it really is by means of intuitive wisdom, he disregards the element of cohesion. He cleanses his mind of the element of cohesion so that the watery nature, no one regards the urine as mine. You know, you put it out. But the blood inside over here, oh, that is my blood. You see that, but they're both the same. They're the same, it's a liquid property is there. So, now you can see people differentiate between one's own urine and somebody else's urine. You know, the other one is really bad, it's not really mine. And this one is a little bit tolerable. See, our views are so bad as well. So that the perception, thought and the view, all those things. And so whatever the liquid thing, you know, that it's really important to apply to every things if you can. You know, that sometimes blood is sort of taken as sort of a big thing because of the color. Some people take it. And although you know or you do not know, there is something to do with it. That there is some sort of a attraction to that one in the mind, the holding it. You should see, even in your meditation, you can actually see these things properly. Because that you like your blood so much because you don't like it is going away because that is sustained you and is the life sort of thing. But it's not somebody else's blood that it is, but it is inside. So if that one is not mine and this is also not mine, it is all constructed. And it's actually amazing, if you apply this one for a long time and see this one, you can really cleanse your mind properly. You need to apply everywhere, wherever you can think of. Like, you know, you spread loving kindness to every beings and then you lose the word about the beings, the human beings, animals and all those things. Likewise, if you apply immensely on the horizon, about the, whatever the liquid things, because you like this sort of, you don't like probably the water inside, but the waterfall and, you know, beautiful water coming, there is something, right? But if this is of this nature, the other one is also of the same nature, same property. So one has to apply for a long time to get into that particular state that Buddha is describing over here. So then he cleanses his mind, so he got rid of the two elements from his mind at this stage. And then Buddha is now talking about the element of heat. The element of heat may be either internal or external. What is the internal element of heat? Anything internal belonging to oneself, that is fire, fiery and sustained, that by which the body is warmed, aged and consumed with fever. And that is which what is eaten, drunk, chewed, and say it gets properly digested, or anything else internal with oneself that is fiery and sustained. This is called the internal element of heat. Now both the internal element of heat and external element of heat are simply element of heat. By means of perfect intuitive wisdom, this should be seen as it really is. This is not mine. This is not me. This is not myself. Having seen thus, as it really is by means of perfect intuitive wisdom, he disregards the element of heat, the cleanses mind of the element of heat. So, even the heat, you see, sometimes we have this the clinging to the heat as well. You know, we like the warmer things. So, outside also there is this warmer thing, you know, if you take a bushfire. So, bushfire is not mine. So, internal heat is also not mine. So, one has to apply in the same way. And what is the element of motion? The element of motion may be either internal or external. What is the internal element of motion? That is the wind property. Anything internal belonging to oneself, that is wind, windy and sustained, upgoing winds, downgoing winds, winds in the stomach, winds in the intestines, winds that course through the body, in and out breathing, or anything else internal within oneself, that is wind, windy and sustained. This is called the internal element of motion. Now, both the internal element of motion and the external element of motion are simply element of motion. By means of perfect intuitive wisdom, they should be seen as it really is. This is not mine. This is not me. This is not myself. Having seen this, thus as it really, by means of perfect intuitive wisdom, he disregards the element of motion. He cleanses his mind of the element of motion. So, Buddha was talking about the element motion in 2500 years ago. When I said to one of these the professors of mathematics over here, oh, is he talking about the motion? You know, that's a big thing for him, because by that time that concept is sort of not seen. Buddha is talking about this notion. It's not the wind we are talking about; it's the motion of the things. So. Wind has got
that, and so Lord Buddha could see how the digestive system worked at that time, isn't it? That's how he said about the things.
Yeah,
who could say that these are the parts of the?
Yes, that's right. Maybe there were some, you know, the doctors and those people, but I suppose that it is the analyzing in this way, because doctors are there, but they are not actually analyzing his body of made of these things and the external, internal, in terms of that. But so Buddha's wisdom is really great. So now we get to know the element of motion. So there are four elements pertaining to the body. Then he got rid of those four ones. And then Buddha explained what is the element of space. The element of space may be either internal or external. What is the internal element of space? Anything internal belonging to oneself, that is space, spatial. That word sustained is not there in Pali. It's a sort of a strong translation over there. The holes of the ears, the nostrils, the stomach, the mouth, whereby that is eaten, drunk, consumed, tasted, gets swallowed, and where it collects, and where by it created from below, or anything else internal within oneself, that is space, spatial, and this is called the internal element of space. Now, both the internal element of space and the external element of space are simply element of space. By means of perfect intuitive wisdom, they should be seen as it really is. This is not mine, this is not me, this is not myself. Having seen this, thus as it really is, by means of perfect intuitive wisdom, he disregards the element of space, cleanses his mind of the element of space. So, whatever the space element over here, whatever the space element outside. But you normally don't think that you are clinging to the space, right? But you are. For example, if you're in an office, you know, somebody putting up some boxes around you over your space, then you will protest in your room. So, what does that mean? That we are clinging to the space. And you can see, when you actually cleanses your mind from the other four great elements and you actually reach the space is infinite level. When you reach the space of infinite level and having seen how beautiful it is, you cling more in that sense. You are so happy to disregard this body and be there. Since you are a Buddhist and you know that this is the impermanent nature of that one would actually get rid of. But if you, without knowing, if you reach there, you feel so happy. It's amazing feeling you get when you reach at that particular point.
I think that's the same reason that people go for holidays and all these things too, isn't it? Because it's outside, you are not
looking at the beach. Look at the beach, when that space far away.
Yeah.
Yes, they do have that thing. Yeah. So But people don't recognize. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like water. Water, when this water is enough and there, don't care about it. When the water is not there, people so, you know, care about it. Like the space is like that. And see that because of the body, those four great elements that we have much suffering, much to do with that body. You know, we need to maintain this one, we need to feed it and all those things. Imagine that you are without this body and you have the mind, the space is infinite. You don't have to go to work, you don't have to feed, you don't have to eat and all those things. And you live for many, many years. Well, how many thousand eons? I can't remember. It's more than 16,000 eons. Maybe 20,000 eons or something.
Eon means kalpa.
Kalpa, mahakalpa. Yeah. So that means that it is like Buddha said that it cannot be computed, right? And only a similarity can be given. So this one measure is that people's lifespan is starting from 10, it increases to the highest value and then come back to the 10. So then that is a kalpa. Okay. And always, if you take mustard seeds and if you fill up with a sort of imagine a box about the 8 kilometers or 16 kilometers up, you know, square type and, you know, sort of that big box, and you put mustard seed over there. And one person come in 100 years time, take one mustard seed and throw it out. So Buddha said, then after a long time, these mustard seeds on that box will be gone, but the eon is still lasting. It is that big.
So this time period you're talking about, what sort of life? You're not talking about like arahant or anything like that.
No. Whoever attained into that state, whoever gone there.
You mean this is divine realm.
Yes. Arahant also can you can be there and you can become an arahant, or is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in those planes.
Mm-hmm.
As well. So maybe that you are never returning, you reach over there because you like it, and it's possible you there and you attain Nibbana over there. You are not coming back anywhere here. So it is that it's sort of a, if you have existence, let's say you disgusted about this body, I don't want this body, you know, this is the most troublesome thing. And then having seen that trouble, then you actually cleanses your mind, and I don't want to have this sort of a form. I want to have one without the form. So you reach those stations of consciousness and be there.
Having understanding the impermanent nature is not enough to get to that stage. You have to really train your
mind
to become deal with jhana some.
If you have the impermanent nature thoroughly understood, you don't go anywhere. Because you know that space is infinite, is also impermanent.
Mm.
So you don't go there. You go attain Nibbana. But if you do not have the impermanent thing, but you have the impermanent nature to a certain extent probably, and then you get rid of this body because that, you know, don't give a damn about this body. This is bad for me, and thinking about the troubles. One can give up and go there and live. So there are beings who go into that
state. It's like that. I think it's that you have to, it's not the understanding, it's the realization within you. It's like a teacher taught us how to do a math question. And we understand at that time, but can you apply to solve your problems? It's something like that. That you have to understand, because if we realize these things, we wouldn't have questions. I mean, we realize that.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. But it's just understanding is because we, as you say that, you always say that you have heard about these things. It's at the end that is it, isn't it? Because we hear it from somebody else, and we know that as a theory, we know that we can tell somebody it is this.
Mm. And it is actually by actually attaining it, you will be there. Because you actually give up this body, you know, that it is, if I give a sort of another example. Now, over here on this earth, let's say there are two people. And let's say husband and wife, or maybe attracted to each other. So one person living over here, the other person climb up a mountain. While you are moving a mountain and you can see that person still over here, but then you lose the features of that person, right? And then you are top of the mountain, you just see a sort of a shadow person's tiny little thing over there. But since you don't see any features and signs of that person, right, then you lose the attractiveness or the, you know, the bondage between that two to a certain extent, right? And now imagine you are actually gone beyond that one, you are going into the moon, right? And then you are looking at this earth, or maybe you are in a star far away and looking at the earth. And how do you see the earth? You perceive earth as tiny little dot, you know, that like we see a star over there, and the earth, when you compare over there, is a very tiny little thing. Now you can see whatever that person we are talking about is insignificant at that time, because it's tiny. And
so you are just talking about the visual sensation, isn't it?
Yeah, visual sensation.
But
and
at the same
the other
time, what happens is, farther you go, the mental attraction became bigger.
Yeah, if you keep on focusing on that one,
yeah,
then you won't see this one.
Yeah.
If you lose that one, then
yes,
you actually see, because that visual attraction is actually because of the contact that occurs.
Yes.
And then with the contact ceases, you should be able to see that this is actually, with your wisdom, you should be able to see that this is something to do with the contact that I have. I mean, there are other people, one would not perceive in the same way. So if you can see, it's something you are actually constructing, that whatever thing supportive of that construction is also losing, if you are thinking it that way. You see, that if you are actually thinking about a person because of the beauty, then if you see another person who is more beautiful than that one, then you can see there is a difference between that the feelings that they have, right? So you can see it is all constructed by the mind. So you might see beautiful gardens and beautiful things, and then that become different as well. So it's at the end, it is the feeling.
Exactly right. So you need to sort of, first of all, you need to sort of get rid of the mental attraction or the feeling that's in your heart to give up things first.
Yeah, it is by this analyzing these elements,
yes,
and seeing the analyzing the elements, you actually give up these things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you can see that person over there, if you actually is not thinking about whatever the qualities of that person or something, and if you look at the physical nature,
yes,
you can see it is nothing now. Whatever the houses I'm talking about, they're tiny little things that they're insignificant. So if it is insignificant, it is easy for someone to give up. Likewise, that when you make your mind very vast, because of these elements, whatever in the earth or beyond earth, inside the body or outside the body, it is the same thing, and I give up my mind about those things. So you use the physical characteristics, and therefore you can get rid of the mind temporarily, not completely. At that time of thinking, you give up. That is your skill.
Yeah.
If you can do it, well, you should try this one. You can see you are in the heaven, the real heaven, and not like this one. Because in order to see this one, you need to see the suffering. Unless you see the suffering, you can't actually give up these things. You know, if you think about the food and food is tasty, I want food and sort of thing, then you can't. But if you think about suffering nature, I have to work 8 hours a day and for this particular food and all those things, then with that wisdom, you can actually say, I'm suffering for this damn thing that gives me this much satisfaction, you know, from here to here. That's all, as Padmasiri says. It is like that. So, similarly, all the other things, very tiny little satisfaction. It's the bones with no meat. Buddha is sort of saying about these pleasures. So, you give up and you go into that space, this infinite level. And so, mind is sort of really good now. There remains only consciousness, pure and bright. See, that's what Buddha said. There remains only consciousness, pure and bright. What does one recognize with that consciousness? One cognizes pleasure. One cognizes pain. One cognizes neither pleasure nor pain. In dependence on the sensory contact, that is to be felt as pleasure, there arises pleasant feeling. When sensing a feeling of pleasure, one comprehends that I am experiencing a pleasant feeling. See, Buddha put it really nicely. One comprehends that with the cessation of that very sensory contact, that is to be felt as pleasure, the concomitant feeling, the feeling pleasure that has arisen independence on the sensory content, that is to be felt as pleasure, ceases, is allayed. So, you can see with the eye and the form, eye consciousness arises. So, meeting of the three is called contact. Because of the contact, we get the feeling. So, when the feeling to be felt as pleasure, that means I constructed that one, that I feel pleasure. It is not actually pleasure. We construct out from our mind that this is pleasure. You know how? Because we used to enjoy that one before. We have accepted that this one is actually pleasure. Then since it is matching, it's like that someone constructs something. And then you, having seen that one, you sort of think, that one is really nice. And I want to construct the same thing. Someone draw a picture. That is nice, I want to draw that picture. So he goes and actually draw the picture. That picture matches this one, then you are happy. As far as when this one is not matching this one and it is different, you are not happy. Because you had the original thought, the perception that this is how it is, that this is pleasurable. It is good, accepted from the mind. Now if you can actually construct the same thing somehow, then you are happy. We are doing the same thing again and again. Having perceived something before and we have perceived it as pleasure, we thought it's a pleasure. We have the view that it is pleasure, but it is actually suffering, but we thought that it is so. And so when we get the same thing again, and if it is matching the former feeling, what I have constructed, I'm happy. Mind is happy, satisfied, because of the construction, sanskara. So the sanskara matching, that's what it is. So now Buddha is saying, independence on the sensory contact, that is to be felt as pain. Independence on the sensory contact, that is to be felt as neither pleasure nor pain. There arises a feeling of neither pleasure nor pain. When sensing a feeling of neither pleasure nor pain, one discerns that I am sensing a feeling of neither pleasure nor pain. One discerns that with the cessation of that very sensory contact, that is to be felt as neither pleasure nor pain, the concomitant feeling, the feeling of neither pleasure nor pain that has arisen independent on the sensory contact, that is to be felt as neither pleasure nor pain ceases. Just as when from the friction and conjunction of two fire sticks, heat is born, fire appears, and from the separation and disjunction of those very same fire sticks, the concomitant heat ceases, is stilled. In the same way, independence on sensory contact, that is to be felt as pleasure, there arises a feeling of pleasure. So, and then the pain, and then the neutral feeling, neither pleasure nor pain. So one sees, discerns that with the cessation of that very sensory contact, that is to be felt as neither pleasure nor pain, the concomitant feeling ceases alive. So when the contact ceases, this one ceases. It's a big thing to take in that one. If there is no eye, there is no form, then the eye consciousness will not come to arise. The last week discussion. When there is eye, there is form.
The worst and the strongest or the most dangerous thing there, because once you, like even for, if you taste something, if you taste a piece of cake, for the first time, you will feel it, you will learning that it's tasty, but if you taste the same thing on a different day with your eyes closed, it won't be as tasty.
Yes.
So it is the eye is the
as creating that particular perception. Yeah. So which one is the winner sort of thing? This question was asked from the Buddha as well. It is depending on the person to person.
And again, if it is the six senses, the mind is the worst thing. And at the end, so yes. That's what makes the problem.
That it is the one actually consume all these things, knowing about these things. Yeah, eye is a sort of biggest thing for us. It is some people is eating is a bigger thing for them, and craving for the eating is there. And,
so if you look at something with mindfulness, then where you should control your thoughts, isn't it?
Yeah, Yeah, if you are not looking at all, that would be better. That is called Indriya Samvara, you know, yes. Guarding your senses. Because if you see with that person or someone with the mindfulness even, then you have to do something about it. You know, this is impermanent. Yes. But if you don't see, if you don't look, you don't have to do anything.
That's
all gone.
That's why said that when monks walk, they should be sort of looking down.
Yes. Yeah. Controlling the faculties. Yeah. So, there remain only equanimity, pure and bright, pliant, malleable, luminous. Just as if a skilled goldsmith or goldsmith's apprentice were to prepare a furnace, heat up a crucible, and taking gold with a pair of tongs, place it in the crucible, he would blow on it time and time, sprinkle water on it time and time, examine it time and time, so that the gold would become refined, well refined, thoroughly refined, flawless, free from dross, pliant, malleable, would become refined. Then whatever sort of ornament he had in mind, whether a belt, an earring, a necklace, or gold chain, it would serve his purpose in the same way. Where there remains only equanimity, pure and bright, pliant, malleable, and luminous. One discerns that if I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright, as this towards the sphere of infinite space, I would develop the mind along those lines. And thus, this equanimity of mind, thus supported, thus sustained, would last for a long time. One discerns that if I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright, as this towards the sphere of infinite of consciousness, sphere of nothing, sphere of neither perception nor non-perception, I develop the mind along those lines. And this thus equanimity of mind, thus supported, thus sustained, would last for a long time. You see that there are six elements. So, we got the element of extension, element of motion, element of cohesion, element of heat, space element, and the consciousness is infinite element. So now you got rid of first four and went to the space is infinite. And going beyond that one, you reach the consciousness is infinite level. Having reached that one, what is actually supported? Is actually supported with feeling. You know, feeling changes, this one changes, so he gave up that one. So he got rid of the six elements. So what is remaining? Nothing. If there are six elements and you got rid of six from your mind at that time, there's nothing remaining. So he reached the plane of nothing, no thing. So there actually you have only the perception. Perception that there is nothing. And now you see that I have the perception that there is nothing. And then I don't want to have that perception either. No, these are really intelligent in that respect. I don't want the body. I don't want the space. I don't want to have the consciousness, that feeling. I don't have the perception. I don't even want to have the perception. So that means neither perception nor non-perception. So he's feeling nevasanya nasanya at that level. So there he's not actually constructing anything at that level. So what Buddha is saying is that this mind is so pure and bright. Now it's like that goldsmith example. A goldsmith actually take the gold and apply the heat and sprinkle water, clean it and then put it back, you know. Keep on refining it. Like this, your mind is so refined into that state. And he can actually maintain it for a long, long time, whatever way he wants. Because mind is now malleable. It can work the way that that person wants. Now, he understands that this can be supported and sustained for a long time. One comprehend that if I were to direct equanimity as pure advice, bright, as this towards the sphere of infinite of space and develop the mind along this line, this is constructed, sankata, it is constructed. If I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright, as this towards the sphere of infinite, towards of consciousness, the sphere of nothingness, sphere of neither perception nor non-perception, and to develop the mind along those lines, that would be constructed. He therefore neither construct nor thinks out of the sake of existence or non-existence. That's a really good word over here. So, nevatam abhisankaranti. Nabhisancheti bhavayava vibhavayava. Bhava, you know, for the existence. The vibhavaya, non-existence. So, he actually understands that all those things are constructed. Whether I go into the space of infinite to the consciousness, it is constructed. Plane of nothing, constructed. Everything is constructed. And having seen that these things are constructed, He's not going to construct. He neither construct nor think out of the sake of existence or non-existence. And you don't get it from the English very well. Bhavaya vavibhavaya nabhisan cheti nabhisan karanti. So, So this being the case, he grasps after nothing in the world, because you can make the mind so pure and bright, but you know and you understand this is constructed, because that your meditation, you know, the meditation practice is the one that led to that one, and it is the construction. So having constructed, I can stay longer time, but since it is constructed, it's subject to fail. So having understood that one, he is not constructing, nor destructing anything either, and he is not clinging to anything in the world. So it says that he grasps after nothing in the world. Not grasping, he is not troubled. Being untroubled, he himself is individually attained Nibbana. So that's the way to attain Nibbana in his method. That is, paritasati is the Pali word. Paritasati is actually mean excited. So he is not actually excited about anything. Even that, believe me, if you actually reach those states, you are excited. At first time, second time or something like that, you when you reach that one, you are really excited, because you can see the physically, mentally, what is your feeling and your happiness and sort of thing. Later on, I'm being a Buddhist, having understood these things, the impermanent nature of that one, because Buddha said, whatever plane you reach, after dying, most of them are being born in animal realm, hell, or plane of departure. So what's the point reaching that one? You've got to have the skill developed going there, because then you know what it is, but you need to understand it is impermanent too.
So the people who meditate, but these are not non-Buddhists, they also can go to the last state, but they don't know that these are constructed.
Yes, they don't understand that part. Yeah.
That's until then they can, if they develop their minds, they can go.
They can, So, if he experiences a pleasant feeling, he comprehends that it is impermanent, not to be cleaved to, not an object of enjoyment. So, sukham, the vedanam, vedeti, sa anichyati pajanati, anajosati pajanati, anavinandati pajanati. That's it. Anajosati, abhinandati, abhivadati, ajosayati, tati. So, we are going other way around. Anajosati pajanati. Anavinandati, abhinandati, not seeing, not delighting. Seeing a feeling of pain, feeling of neither pleasure, no pain, one discerns that it is fleeting, not grasped at, not relished. Sensing a feeling of pleasure, one senses it disjoint from it. Sensing a feeling of pain, similarly, a feeling limited to the body, you know, when the body passes away, the certain feeling goes away. So there are certain feelings limited to the life. So the when the life goes away, it is going away. So he understands that with the break up of the body, with the, after the termination of life, all that is experienced, not being relished, will grow cold right here. It's gone. So he actually abiding detached. Just as an oil lamp burns independent on oil and wick, and from the termination of the oil and wick, and from not being provided any other sustenance, it goes out. Same thing, oil and the wick. Even so, when sensing a feeling limited to the body, one discerns that I am sensing a feeling limited to the body. When sensing a feeling limited to the life, one discerns that I am sensing a feeling limited to life. One discerns that with the breakup of the body, after the termination of life, all that is sensed, not being relished, will grow cold here. Thus the monk, so endowed, thus is endowed with the highest result for wisdom. For this monk is the highest Aryan wisdom, that is to say, the knowledge of complete destruction of suffering. Prajnadhisthana is that one. So he actually give up, you know, those elements, element of extension, element of heat, all those things, and then six elements, and all the worlds one can think of, he's now given up. He's not even constructing anything or destructing anything, and he has no intention for anything in the world. So that's the highest Aryan wisdom. That is this, that is the knowledge of complete destruction of suffering. And his release being founded on truth is unshakable, because he saw it himself. By attaining that level, he saw it himself. Since he has seen it, it is unshakable. If somebody comes and tell you that it is not the case, he doesn't believe, he doesn't give a damn about that one. For that which is liable to falsity, monk, is falsehood. That truth which is not liable to falsity is Nibbana. So it's a really big word over here. Tamhi bhikkhu musa. Musa, we know about Musa, Musa Vada, Musa. Yam Musa Dhamma. If it is Musa, Musa Dhamma. Everything in the world is musa and mosa dhamma. Tan satcham yam amosa dhamma nibbana. If there is anything in the world that is not subject to falsity, is nibbana. Anything else is musa. Whatever way you term it, you know, you are saying that, you know, the science is like that. Because we discovered something, you know, that this is one, and then five years later, oh no, it is not that way and that one. So,
that
so many.
That's what they are called theories,
huh? Yeah. They don't call it musa.
Yeah.
It is like.
Yeah, actually, that I heard this, what the meaning of tata, it was described by Yam. It is as he explained, or he probably found somewhere. And Tathagata means the Buddha enlightenment is anything he explained in the beginning of enlightenment and passing away date and everything is, there is nothing you can
prove wrong.
That is the meaning of Tathagata. Mm-hmm. And also, that is very, very, very striking nature of Tathagata. Mm-hmm. And other things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lord Buddha. Now, for example, when we are growing up and maturing, what we say is sometimes I did a mistake, something like that. I was not that correct. That is happening everybody,
yes.
Right? But Lord Buddha never did. And his first sermon was Dhammacakkappavattana Sutra. And anything from that point, the end of that, me passing away, everything is, he didn't say, I was wrong.
Oh, there. Sorry, it should be said this way.
Not a word.
I think the reason for that is actually because it's not through experiments or something like that. It's not like through observations you have come to a conclusion.
It's a direct scene.
It's direct scene. And that's what when you start reading that, small sutras, what's it, Anguttara Nikaya, isn't it? You say that why you have to believe these things? Because Lord Buddha always tells the monks, I'm telling this because I have seen this.
I have known this.
Yeah,
yes.
Because when you read this, and there is no other way you can put your idea into that, you know? That's it. Because it's no use of you, because all the time if you argue, anybody would argue, because you have a bit of guilty conscience if your idea is not proved, because you have done something wrong.
Yes, it is my idea, it is not the truth.
So
he got the satchadittana, for this which is liable to falsity, monks is false. The truth which is not liable to falsity is nibbana. Thus a monk is endowed with the highest result for truth. For this monk is the highest R in truth. That is to say, Nibbana, that is not liable to falsity. I would actually highly recommend you to read these four paragraphs about these four statements. It's a really valuable statement. Try to keep it in your mind.
Yeah.
Read it in Pali. That would be the best. Parama Arya Panya Yadidan Sabha Dukkya Kai Jnana. So, doesn't matter. I mean, learn it from Pali as well. But if you can remember these four statements, it's really valuable. Because as I said in the middle of this discourse, these four relinquishment lead to the four kind of samadhi, concentration. So these statements is that of that value. Your concentration is based on these four adhisthana. So if you have at least one, then you get something.
Which one we are talking about? This four statements?
Thus a monk so endowed thus, is endowed with the highest resolve for wisdom. For this monk is the highest R in wisdom. That is to say, the knowledge of complete destruction of suffering. After that oil lamp thing.
I didn't go through
it. After that oil lamp example.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things. Whereas formerly he foolishly had taken on mental acquisitions and brought them to completion, he has now abandoned them. See that statement alone? Whereas formerly he is foolishly had taken on mental acquisitions and brought them to completion. You take something to your mind, you know, I need this food, I need that one, I need that person, I need this thing. And then you complete it. Mental acquisition acquired and then complete it. That's the stupid thing that we do. So this person, now having seen the truth, in this way, So he has now abandoned them. Their root destroyed, like an uprooted palm tree, deprived of the conditions of development, not destined for future arising. Thus, a monk is endowed with the highest result for relinquishment. For this monk is the highest R in relinquishment. That is to say, casting away of all clinging. That's the third statement is that one, chagadittana, giving up all clinging. And sabbupatinissagga is also coming up over there as the word. Paramo arya chago yadidan sabbupatinissagga. Formerly he foolishly had greed as well as desire and infatuation. He has now abandoned them. Their root destroyed, like an uprooted palm tree, deprived of the conditions of development, not destined for future arising. Whereas formerly he foolishly had malice as well as ill will and hatred, he has now abandoned them. Where formerly he foolishly had ignorance as well as delusion and confusion, he has now abandoned them. Their root destroyed, like an uprooted palm tree, deprived of conditions of development, not destined for future arising. Thus, a monk so endowed is endowed with the highest determination for calm. For this, the calming of passion, aversion, delusion is the highest noble calm. Parama arya upasamo yadidam raga dosa moha upasamo. Raga dosa moha. You see, the lust, malice and the ignorance is completely leading to the suffering. That's so, nowhere else. Whatever lust we have, it leads to that arising phenomena of suffering. That is this, the upadha sankata lakkana. That is this construction, and when you construct, let's say your body you constructed with the birth, what you get is aging and death. So you can get the viparinama dukkata in Pali. Or you have the malice, anger, and there is this dukkha dukkata, or the painfulness as pain. That is what happening. So that is because of the titasa anyatatta lakkana, that is that this alteration of things which that stands. So for example, there is a teacher, good teacher who used to be there, and then that teacher is gone, replaced by a bad teacher. So you have the painfulness as pain. And or else, there is, depending on the delusion, we get the ignorance, and with the ignorance that you get this cruelty feeling, and then get this the vayasankata lakkana. That is that whatever thing we construct is failing. Now over here you can see it's going very deep. I can go there into space is infinite. I can construct that one, stay for a long, long, long time. But it is also constructed. So that dukkata is there. You live for there for a long time, and then you are actually losing that one. How much, you know, suffering over there itself. So there are these four adhisthana. One should not neglect of discernment. So one should not be neglecting on the wisdom. That is, that we need to see that this body, this internal, whatever thing it is, these things are not mine. This is not mine. This element of exchange and element of heat, going every element, analyzing, and they are not mine. That is this wisdom and giving up craving completely. So one should not neglect of wisdom, should guard the truth. So the truth is that what he has actually realized himself. Be devoted to relinquishment, so chagadittana, giving up, you know, whatever the feelings, cravings and all those things, giving up. And train only for calm, calm regard to lobha dosa moha, passion, aversion and delusion. Thus it was said, and in reference to this source it said, monk, when it is said, where there is stability, conceit and boasting do not continue in existence. When they do not continue in existence, the saga is said to at peace. One should not be negligent in wisdom, should guard the truth, be devoted to relinquishment, and train only for calm. With reference to what was it said, I am monk, this is a supposition, that this is my favorite thing here. I am a monk is a supposition. This I am, I will be, I will not be, I will be possessed of form. I shall not be possessed of form, I shall be percipient. I shall not be percipient, I shall be neither percipient nor percipient, is construing. Supposition is a disease, supposition is an impostum, supposition is an arrow, salla. By going beyond all supposition, he is called saga at peace. So see, that having attained the concentration level, the first jhana or second jhana and sort of thing, I am, you know, I am attained of the first jhana level. So conceit, mana. So a bhikkhu, for example, having attained that one, others don't have it. Oh, I'm great. It's a sickness. That's what Buddha is saying. So Buddha is not saying into that one. Neva sanya na sanya. Neither percipient nor non-percipient level. You can go into the highest level. Still, it is a sickness. Constructing anything is a sickness. So you can see where is there is anything that you can think of constructing. Anything you construct is a sickness. That the impostum, supposition, is an error. So the Pali word is for supposition is manyita metam. That I am making up. I am. I will be. I will not be. Furthermore, a saga at peace is not born. This is another nice statement over here. Does not age. Does not die. Is unagitated. And is free from longing. So there is no craving for whatever thing it is. He has nothing whereby he would be born. Not being born, will he age? If someone is not going to be born, will he age? Not aging, will he die? If you are not aging, you are not dying. Not dying, will he be agitated? If you are not dying, you are not going to agitate because you are forever. Not being agitated, for what will he long for? So you see, with the agitation, we have the longing. Agitation is bad as well. You know that when someone passes away, we cry and sort of thing and have this particular one, it is leads to existence again. That upadana paccaya bhava, upayasa paccaya bhava is there in Pitakopadesa. So that one is also bad. Because that when you are tired, so much tired, and if you are really sensitive, if you are tired, where your mind is going? Your mind going for sensual pleasures. If you are so tired, if you are not trained your mind, if you are not sensitive and know that one, if you are so tired, your mind is going for sensual pleasure.
Yeah, even sleep, even you like to sleep is something like that too. Because you need a pleasure anyway. That's why you sleep, isn't it? When you are tired, you won't go
there. In that particular situation. Yes. Yeah. So, this is the after the death. You know, when you break your body, you departed from your body. Because of the body, that you have this, you lost the body. Therefore, there is this suffering. When there is suffering, it is actually making you feel bad.
Are you talking about the mind-made thing?
Yes, it is. The body is gone and now you have this particular one. And now it is disturbing, it is troubling. So you have the sadness, so the mental sadness over there. Mental sadness is going to soka. And so soka is that you live with that soka, soka kirim, so by. And then that lead to the upayasa, that this your mind is so bad. You know, some people get collapse, you know, that they cry, you know, mother, father, and so on, then they can't bear it, you know, they faint as well. So, to that level. And those things lead to the existence as well. And
so, they because in that stage, the fear or that sort of a sadness, does that make a sort of a karma that or something like that you born in hell?
That depends on your you know the environment, what you see and how you react, your feeling and sort of thing. But purely if you not thinking about your that karma part of it, but why you are crying, why you are unhappy, one because you want something.
So at that stage maybe can they see the others behaving the same way too?
If you are in the mind-made body, you can see what you see is you are unsettled person. You are without a body. Others have a body. They eat. They play. They have a house. I don't have a house. Like that. So agitated scenario. So now.
Are we talking about a normal living person and a dead person?
Well, you can get two examples over here. One is actually you die yourself. The other one is somebody has passed away and then you are actually having this sort of scenario. So both, you are crying for that passing away person. Then you have so much craving you develop and build on known that account,
yes.
Right? So you want that one very badly, so therefore existence is there for you, because upadana paccaya bhava, right? And let's say you die yourself, and then you are without a body, and let's say you are lucky enough to have the mind made body and there, and then you can actually say that how you are affected, that others are having this fun time, and they got a body, they got a house and all those things. Now this one actually suppressing, creating problems for your mind and the body, the mind made body, right? So because of that one, you want to be born. Believe me, if you actually get a place in a mother's womb or somewhere, you are really happy at that time. Because you are, while you have the body and the mind and living over here, you can't think of that one. When you don't have a one, it is like that water, the space scenario you were talking about. That's the place you can actually feel how it is to live without it. Because you live with this body for a long, long time. Imagining losing that and living without it.
One cannot live with the mind-made body for a long time.
Short time. Yeah, 7 days or something like that.
What he says is, during that time also, so yes. You get so much fear and sadness if you...
Suffering.
Yeah, because you are not... you are not sure that where you will be gone.
You are suffering and you are actually probably visiting your place as well. I can tell you my experience in about 2 births ago. So I died from sort of a heart attack or something. And mind-made body, I can see my body over here down, you know, lying down. I'm thinking why my body is there and why I am there. Is that confusing? And then you sort of realize that you are dead or something. And then where you go? You are going to your place, your place you are living. So you see your sons and all those things, you know, that, you know. I had about 15-year-old son over there. And he is looking at outside. So you get the sad feeling from that one as well. So all sadness. You lost your body. You lost everything. You know what you left with. So then you look for... another body somewhere. So it's continuing in this song. So that is a lucky state in that state.
So during that period, do you create body self formations?
Yeah. I want to be born.
Okay.
That is the biggest one. I want to be born somewhere. So now, then the thought occurred to Venerable, Kusati, surely the teacher has come to me. Surely the one will go on has come to me. Surely the rightly self-awakened one has come to me. Getting up from his seat, arranging his upper robe over one shoulder, bowing down with his head at the Blessed One's feet, he said, a transgression has overcome me, Lord, in that I was so foolish, so muddle-headed, and so unskilled as to assume that it was proper to address the Blessed One as friend. May the Blessed One please accept this confession of my transgression as such so that I may restrain myself in the future. Yes, monk, the transgression overcame you in that you were so foolish, so muddle-headed and so unskilled as to assume that it was proper to address me as friend. But because you see your transgression as such and make amends in accordance with the Dhamma, we accept your confession, for it is the cause of growth in the Dhamma and discipline. Of the noble ones, when seen transgression as such, one makes amends in accordance with the Dhamma and exercise restraint in the future. It is a very important thing as well. If you see that this sort of a thing, you made a mistake in the Dhamma, you know that we say that let those beings forgive us, sort of in one gatha, you know, whatever thing I have done wrong for that one, it's very important. Very valuable that you actually have the
is that the one
kaya namacharya see, so whatever the translation, sort it out, because if you have those things, you do not know it is remaining with you, and that one is the one you preventing you from going forward as well. So it's very important.
So but the whatever you have done in the past when you didn't know Dhamma, paid away when you realize them, isn't it?
When you realize and then you ask for the pardon for that one from the, because you have accepted the important thing is you understood that this wrong thing has been done by me and I now accept that I have done this wrong thing. So therefore your mind become pure. So, Lord, may I receive full acceptance, ordination as a monk from the Blessed One. And are your robes? Are your robes and vow complete? No, Lord, my robe and vow are not complete. Tathagata, do not give full acceptance to one those whose robes and vow are not are incomplete. There are exceptions, you know, that some people who has done given this Atapirikara, Buddha can say, come bhikkhu. So they get the robes automatically, sort of thing. So if someone has not done, then they can't. Then Venerable Pukkusati, delighting and rejoicing in the Blessed One's words, got up from his seat, bowed down to the Blessed One and keeping him on his right, left in search of robes and bowl. And while he was searching for this, a runaway cow killed him. Then a large number of monks approached the Blessed One and on arrival, having bowed down to him, sat to one side. As they were sitting there, they said to Blessed One, Lord, the clansman Pukkusati, whom the Blessed One instructed with brief instruction, has died. What is his destination? What is his future state? Amongst the clansman Pukkusati was wise. He practiced the Dhamma in accordance with the Dhamma and did not pester me with issues related to Dhamma. With the destruction of the first five fetters, he has arisen spontaneously in the pure abodes. They are to be totally unbound, never again to return from that world. That is what Blessed One said, gratified the monks, delighted in the Blessed One's words. It's a really good story as well. And I have read this one, I don't know the number of times I have read this discourse. It is so much to take. You don't take this one at once, because the Satchadhitthana, you know, those Adhitthana. And then the highest R in resolve, highest R in truth is spelled out in this discourse. Nowhere else. It is spelled out in like this one, but it is mentioned in very briefly certain places. It is a really good discourse. If you don't understand it at once, because you can't remember these terms leading to this thing. What is that, this wisdom, prajnana pamajjati, what means by that one? So you need to keep on thinking and keep on reading this one many times. And it's really valuable discourse. Really good.
Can I ask something? This has nothing to do with all this one. Because most of the sutras, I have noticed that this mad cow thing comes. Why is that? Is that the way that it was translated? Or?
No. That's just the instance. There were two or three instances that one. Yes. Yeah, so that those cows were running around.
Otherwise, it's not the later when the suit, to complete the suit.
No. About few discourses, not many. That this Dharachiya Buddha died that way. There are few. Few. Not many.
One old mother.
Buddha
was knowing that she's going to die very soon, and so she couldn't understand anything from that, but by looking at worshipping Buddha is enough for her to be
able to.
So
that means,
yeah.
The other one is the
Bahir. So.
Another question actually. And what is the reason that this dharma is very, very clear anyway. So there is no way that somebody can change it. That's what I see. And how this the Buddhism break into different groups? What meant it?
Well, those wrong views coming up.
Yeah, but it should be something to do with this Siksha
Pada,
isn't it?
No. While Buddha is there, you see that there was one monk who was saying that it is the consciousness that is going from one to another, that sort of thing. Remember that discourse? So he got the view by having heard this Dhamma, and then that is how he actually got into his view, and then he is spreading that one. So there are, so let's say there are two people actually saying like that one, and few people gathered with him. Yes, that's how I see it as well. So then they get the fractions. Understanding
then, that. Yeah, how come this, some monks get married and because it's totally against, because it's okay to, for sort of lay people can go to certain stages while married or whatever. That's a different case, because you are not in a row. and because this the monk is in a row, isn't it?
Well, that, they change the theory. They change the theory. It is that the Buddha is, when you actually attain sort of thing, it's just a, it's a reincarnation of the Bodhisattva or something.
Mm.
You know, the Mahayana is actually talking about that. So it is, he never die, he never attain. Mm. He pass away, come back to world time to time, that sort of thing. So I want to be one of them. So that's how they practice.
But ignorance, that's ignorance anyway, that I can
no, I think that the problem was not treating Dhamma as teacher. Mm. That's the main problem.
That's right.
Dhamma is this. Mm. No, I think, for example, in Eastern countries like Thailand or whatever, Burmese, they don't follow Sutra Pitaka or whatever the thing.
No, Taiwan. It is actually talking about this, the Tibet.
Yeah.
Tibet sort of thing. So Mahayana.
Mahayana, yes. Now, they don't follow Sutra Pitaka.
Even Theravada countries.
Yeah, in
now
Sri Lanka
they,
too. Mm. For example, now, actually, among the bhikkhus who preach in these three dhammas, who reads this and then follow this?
Very few. Very few.
Yeah, but what my confusion is actually because the consequences are the same anyway. But what happens because that bad, I don't know whether it is the principles or attitudes or whatever, doesn't make them go to hell? I can't see where else they would go because that's, isn't it? Because it's very strong, I mean, it's not a...
Mm. Yeah, but you know,
no,
I mean,
it's not, it's very strong. No, I mean, I still can't understand why, because they say they are monks and they are Buddhist and all these things. But you multiply doing bad things. I mean, it's a, and then you teach others to do bad things. Because it's not like it's what my view or somebody else's view. And it's, but I mean, I don't bother what they do. Mm. It's not the case. But isn't it? The consequence is the same.
Well, we can't analyze that consequences, but we can sort of see that probably they will go into the bad destinations. Mm. That's what we can think.
Yeah.
But there may be good things they are doing as well. So you know, there may be sort of a balance.
Yeah, but they do good things. That's why I accept too. But more than that.
Mm.
Doesn't the other part come up?
Well, if you are thinking about the getting married, then those things, well, that means there are no monks.
Yeah, but
so that means hell. That
yeah.
is, there's no doubt about it. But there are certain things that, you know, they don't do that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they behave, you know, that within this Mahayana also, there are monks who are actually practicing, you know, that maybe they are within that framework, but they are not going into those bad things.
Okay.
Yeah, so living a pure life, because of the pure life, although that teaching was bad, but part of that one is correct.
Mm.
So there may be certain elements in that one. They may not attain anything, but they might prevent, because anyone who is guarding these things, you know, kamma pala, and he knows that one, and then, yeah, there is this ability to... not go down if someone knows that. I think probably we'll stop the week.